Accession number 23141, Reel 1.
Mr. Horton, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Benfleet, Essex.
Which year was this?
That was in 1921, in March.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Benfleet?
No.
Can you tell me about it, please?
I was born in Benfleet, and when I was a young boy, I was taken to Bradford. Bradford, North. My mother was Yorkshire, and my father was badly wounded on the Somme, so he couldn't work much, and they went back to where her parents were.
So you grew up in Bradford?
Till I was three. Then we moved. We didn't move, what do you mean, literally move. We walked from Bradford down to the south in stages. Of course, it was in the 20s, the Depression, and we walked right down to Essex.
Back to Benfleet?
And back to Southend, it was.
So did you go to school in Southend?
So I went to school in Southend, for a little while, a little infancy. And then we moved from Southend to Ashingdon, Essex, and that's where I had a good bit of schooling.
Can you remember this walk down from the north to the south?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was very vivid for me. We had stopped at nights in barns. And we had a police station for two nights. And we was always sleeping out on farms and under barns. And that was... There was my older brother, Jim. There was me. There was my next brother, Les. My sister. And my younger brother. He wasn't born then. He was born in Thundersley when we got back to Essex, yeah.
And this was just with your mother?
With my mother and father.
How old were you?
I must have been about three and a half or something like that.
So can you remember how hard it was?
It was very hard at times, and of course we had to get the water out of the cattle troughs for cooking, you know, for brewing up and that. You know, I can remember that and washing.
How long did it all take?
I haven't a clue. It must have taken a long time. Yeah.
Why did the family just not stay in Bradford?
In the 20s, there was no work at all up there, and more down the south than there would be in the north. The Depression was on.
How old were you when you finished school?
I finished from when we left Ashingdon. We moved to Hampshire. We went on a train, and when we got there, we didn't realise, but he had two tents. We were camping in a farmer's field at Hook, near Basingstoke. From then on, we moved to Maple Durwell, which is in Hampshire, and then we finally got one of these very old houses, you know, with a thatched roof on a farm, and that's where we stayed until I left school at 14, and then I worked on the farm for two or three years.
Did you join the forces before the war?
No, I was I volunteered in 1940, and I joined up in 1940, August 40.
What was farm work like before the war?
Very heavy. I had to go and get the cows in at 4:30 in the morning, I had to put them in the stalls. We had to wash all their udders, and then we had to milk them, just me and the farmer. And then from there it was carted up to the dairy, put through the heater, and from there into churns, and his brother would have a horse and cart, and he would go out on his milk round. And that was twice a day.
How did that work suit you?
Terrible. It was very hard. I mean, I had to do then all the mucking out, fill the cart with manure, take it out onto the fields and all that. And then when it was harvesting, or we worked with shire horses. I worked with a shire horse. I never did the ploughing. He always did the ploughing, but I did the raking behind and all that work. Yeah.
What was it like to work with shire horses?
Beautiful. They're beautiful animals, yes. And they were in with the cows in the morning. They would, when I got around at the cows, they would come straight running up to you, you know, and you'd give them a little touch and they'd come in with you. And you put them in their stalls and put their old feed bag there, and that was it. And then you'd be using them all day then.
What was the name of this farm?
It was Chinham Farm. It's now a housing estate at Chinham. Yeah. But the people who owned it was Bowman, called Bowman's Farm at Chinham.
So you didn't like this work?
It was very, very heavy. It was 7 days a week, very heavy.
Do you remember Chamberlain declaring war on Germany?
Yes, I can go into that now. From the time I left the farm, I went, and we lived in Basingstoke. We moved from there into Basingstoke on a council estate. From there, I was an errand boy for quite a while. Then I got to work in an auto called the Auto Tyre Factories at Basingstoke. This was remoulding cars, tyres, and all that, you know, lorry tyres. And we were working there in 1938. The actual, you know, the war was always looming. And my brother, we both worked there together. He was 3 years older than me. And we were getting a bit of stick there. They were putting more work on. And he looked in the paper and he saw at Chelmsford they wanted labourers at so much an hour, you know, and he said, we'll pack this job up and go there, which we did. And when we got there, this was 1938, before the war was declared, we were building air raid shelters, concrete, you know, air raid shelters. When that had all done, and Marconi's work it was, when that was done, they said, go and get a saw and a hammer and come back as carpenters. And we were doing all the shuttering and all the wood, inside the factories, and covering all the glass over with stuff. And when that had finished, wanted sprayers. And I was spraying a tower on the 3rd of September when war was declared.
How did you feel about the news?
Never worried me. Didn't ring a bell. You know, not. I suppose 19 doesn't. You know, think. And then my brother was called up because he was 23, 1921, 22, and then the work didn't progress as much as that, so I went back home and joined up, you know. But I didn't go in, they didn't take me until August.
What did you want to go into?
The Royal Marines.
And why did you want to go in the Royal Marines?
Because my friend, my boyfriend, my friend who was always with me when we were boys at Basingstoke, he joined the Royal Marines, and I always saw him, and he told me what a good life it was, you know. So I decided to volunteer for the Royal Marines, and I got in the Royal Marines for hostilities only.
What did you say about the Royal Marines which attracted you?
All the uniform, and they used to fire the guns on the big ships, you know, and that was what he used to tell me. That was it was totally different in wartime. we were just soldiers. Yes, I went to I was called up and sent to Lympston in Devon, and we did our basic training there a few weeks. We were sent to Stonehouse Barracks in near Plymouth.
What was the training at Lympston like?
Oh, very hard. It was all rifle and drill and learning things all the time. And then we were sent to Stonehouse Barracks in Plymouth, and I was assigned to a searchlight unit, and I became a spotter. It was with a pair of binoculars, and you guided the aircraft the searchlight onto them, and then the guns would pick them off like that. And that was my job.
Was it difficult to spot the planes?
Very, very difficult. Only once did I ever have a chance to do that, because we moved. And we moved to Southend-on-Sea, of all things. Oh, sorry. We moved to Kingsdown Deal, into a holiday chalet up on top, just about a few miles from Deal, up on the coast, was these holiday chalets. We moved in there to do our basic field training. This is in summer of 1940. We were doing our basic field training there, and the German, aircraft was going over in block formation, and Mrs. Smiths were diving, and they never took any notice of us. They just dived over the top of us, straight in the sea, because the sea was below us. And we had one rifle, and we had a rifle and 25 rounds. That's all you could have. There was nothing else. And we was Cape Greenay was, you could almost see it over in the distance. And we were the first troops there. We did our basic training there, field training. And while we were there, we were taken to a defensive position for a little while near in Kent, somewhere there, not a good way from Deal. And we was taken there and shown what would happen if the Germans came. Once you'd had to retreat from the beach, you would have to fall back to this position. And on this road was, you wouldn't remember, you wouldn't know these, but the old petrol pumps were like that. You pumped your petrol up and into your car.
With a lever.
One of those was by the side of the road. On the other side was a box of Molotov cocktails. And what they told us to do was, when the German tanks come up, your friend would pump up, or you would pump up, and you or your friend who was doing it would, when they've got there, would throw a Molotov and set them alight.
Did you think the Germans would come?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
What kind of success do you think you might have had if the Germans had come?
We'd have been annihilated. We had no weapons, no mortars. One 1914-18 Lewis gun and 25 rounds, nothing else.
Were you in a Royal Marines unit by now?
Yes, they were in this 11th searchlight. That we were attached, that was our unit, the 11th Battalion Searchlight Unit.
Royal Marines?
Royal Marines, yes.
Did you and the rest of your friends know that you would be annihilated, or think that you'd be annihilated if the Germans invaded?
Not our.
So what was morale like?
We took it as it was, because, I mean, you were seeing the aircraft go over every day. There was no opposition to them. They were just going over and over and over and just coming back. And we weren't putting up any fight, were we?
Was it summer or autumn? Or
it was summer 1940, yeah. Yeah, getting on August, back September, I suppose.
How long were you on that kind of standby?
We were there for about 3.5 weeks.
Did you get any attacks from the air?
None.
What do you remember happening next?
And then we were then sent to Southend on Sea in Billet, and from there we were sent on embarkation leave, and when we came back we were put on trains and sent and finished up in Greenock in Scotland, boarding the ship.
Were you still in the 11th Battalion?
It was the whole battalion. We were as a battalion, all of us, yeah. That was it, yeah.
Who were your particular friends in the battalion at this time?
None particularly at the top. We're all good, sort of like mates, you know. There was quite a few, there were from Manchester, Liverpool, all over, you know, and they were very good, and Glasgow and all that, all young men, and all very good friends. You couldn't say you had put one particular one, you were all good friends, yeah. When you did your marching, you all sang with each other, you know, and that was it.
Going back to Plymouth, where you were spotting aircraft.
Yes.
Were you in air raids there?
Not a one. Yeah. They had them at Plymouth, but we were quite a way out, you know. Mm.
So you went to Greenock to...
It moored the ship, yeah.
Which ship was this?
It was the... what was it there called? The Rangitata. It was a New Zealand ship. It was a sister ship to the Rangitiki, which took on the... Was it the Scharnhorst or one of those?
What were conditions like aboard this ship?
Very, very crowded. Yeah. You just slept on a deck, you know. Down in a deck, that's all. Food was all right. Yeah, we enjoyed the food. And we never got molested at all. We went straight from Greenock over to Sierra Leone on the west coast of Africa. From there, we went down to Durban. It took quite a while.
Did you go ashore?
From Durban, we got up our ship and was put in just by the race course in tents, and we stayed there for at least a fortnight, and then we were put on another ship.
What was it like ashore in South Africa?
Beautiful, yeah. They really looked after you. Yes.
Yeah. What did they do for you?
They used to give us food and that, you know, and take us in and give us a drink and all that and food, yeah. They were brilliant people. Yeah.
And then?
Then we were put on this ship and... there was a lady in white always singing on the quayside, yeah. She was singing there, and she was singing, goodbye to us, and we pulled out from there, and going up to, went through the Red Sea up to Port Said, and we disembarked there by, what's the name of the place now? I think it's Port Said.
Ismailia?
Ismailia. A place called Ismailia. And there, all our equipment was brought, and we were formed into our searchlights and things, and we were there. And we were there for, I suppose, a good 3 or 4 weeks. And then we got a call. We had to pack up and go to, and they took us to Alexandria. And there we boarded the ship, the New Amsterdam, a Dutch ship, I should imagine. And we didn't know where we were going, but we landed in Crete.
What was the voyage in the New Amsterdam like?
Well, it was not only us, but there was ever so many troops on there. It was very, very crowded. Yeah, and we were, almost glad to get off. It didn't take... we're pulling in there at night into Crete, and there was an air raid going on at one of the towns, and the German aircraft, he flew over, and all the Lewis guns and that opened up and brought him down. And next minute we're almost into Suda Bay, where we disembarked. And we were then, we realised what they called us was the MMBDO-1, Mobile Naval Defence Organisation. Yeah. And we were stationed just at the back of Suda Bay.
What was the landscape like?
It was lovely. I mean, it was hilly. We're on hill, and all olive trees and quite big, like those things, the cactus things and that. And the very, very warm. And of course, there was no town near us. It was just, you could just look down to the harbour. That's all, where the ships were. We were just back under the olive trees.
And was this a searchlight unit, or...?
We never had a searchlight at all. We later found out that they'd been sunk, anyway, the equipment in the ship that was bringing it.
So what equipment did you have?
Just one Canadian Ross rifle with 25 rounds of Remington ammunition.
You were supposed to have equipment?
That was all. We were supposed to have searchlights, but nothing arrived. It meant sent them. We had orders every morning to stand to at 4 o'clock in the morning on this gun site, RA gun site. What had happened, the New Zealanders and the Australians, which had been evacuated from Greece, had been put on Crete, but they'd lost their arms. So any what they call consider, like those people who were on guns, didn't need a gun or ammunition, so they gave it to them. So we had, if in case, I think they might have known that there was going to be an invasion, because we used to stand to at 4 o'clock in the morning, stand down at 8. And I presume they knew that they were going to land early in the morning, And we stood down this morning. By the way, our rations were practically non-existent. We used to get one tin of bacon between four and a packet of biscuits between four for your breakfast. You had to have a bit of water, no tea. And dinner was the same with bully beef and nothing else after that. And we just got back on the 20th there to our camp, And we'd opened the bacon and that, and all of a sudden, these aircraft, because they used to take not too much notice of aircraft, because they were flying around all the time, Stukas and doing it. We never had any aircraft, so they were just like flies around there. And we saw these, and suddenly they dropped three loads of paratroopers on us. And by the time we'd cleared them and got back to the gun site, out of 112, there's 11 left. They'd murdered them.
How did you clear the paratroopers?
Well, we killed them. We shoot them, yeah.
As they were coming down?
As they were coming down, they're screaming. They got no arms with them, and a lot of them are going into trees. And their arms are in a separate container. So they got nothing.
So they were screaming with terror, you mean?
Screaming, yes, with terror. Everybody's firing them up, and they're coming in. Coming down, according to what the record said, there would be no opposition there. And there they're landing on hundreds and thousands of troops. Anyway, we got there, the three gliders had landed on there, onto that site. Not the paratroops, they'd landed on us. But the things had got... Those were what we had to get out of the way, and we did away with them.
Did you do any firing on the paratroopers yourself?
Oh, yeah, we all fired, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How many rounds do you think you might have fired?
I fired something like about 20, I think, before there were no more coming down.
Do you think you hit anybody?
Oh, you're bound to have hit. You couldn't miss.
Why couldn't you miss?
Well, they're so low. They're not coming down. They're coming down at 500 feet.
Mm. Were they coming down slowly or quickly?
Parachutes then, they weren't very like they are today. They didn't come down all that fast, yeah. Mm.
So there were virtually no survivors?
There was no survivors of those. One of the aircraft was on fire as it went past through, and saw him crash over the other side. And when we got back to, when we did get up to there, there was a massacre. And
what was the massacre?
The Royal RAs were manning the guns. Out of 112, only 11 survived. They just shot them.
Who shot them?
The Germans. Three gliders had landed on their site.
Did you go to the place where they'd been massacred?
Oh yeah, we all had to go up there, and they had to get these glider people, yeah, which they did get. And we took one prisoner, and he was an Austrian.
What happened to him?
He was speaking good English, and I don't know what happened in the end to him. Because our section had to move off to a position in Galatos.
Mr. Horton, Reel 2.